So today I'm going to discuss a seminar on science of Gita or science in Gita, whatever. The idea is to show you that Gita is complete in itself, both spiritually and materially. Now we have all possible knowledge in Bhagavad Gita. All possible means not only spiritual, but all subjects in this material world, not in details but in principles, are there in Bhagavad Gita. So that's what I'm going to show you today. And also I'm going to show you why Bhagavad Gita is so famous among all scholars, philosophers worldwide, and why it is applauded by so many intellectuals all around the world, in spite of it being called as a Hindu religious book. But it's not like that. Okay, let's see this. By the way, you can take this book, and anyway, this is the college which I am going to, like I'm planning to open. This is not a materialistic college, but a Vedic college, which we are going to open in Himachal Pradesh in India. There's a place where I'm intending to give seminars and courses on spirituality, science, philosophy, which can train devotees to preach to others and to themselves also. Both. Okay. Yeah, this is the science of Bhagavad Gita, yes. So, you know what, Bhagavad Gita is a very important tool, let's say, and a book to preach and to understand, because with this one book you can travel all around the world and challenge anybody. Not just spiritualists, not just philosophers, but scientists, theologians, theosophists, anybody you can meet, you can just challenge and you can just straight away quote from Bhagavad Gita. Like for example, I go to America and I give seminars in, I think 2 years back, 3 years back, I gave a seminar in Boston, America, Harvard University, and there were like scientists sitting, and I was speaking from Bhagavad Gita. But of course, I was speaking science from Bhagavad Gita, that's another thing. And they were impressed, and they say, yeah, they bought Bhagavad Gita. They bought it. It's, if you know what I'm telling, it's difficult, very difficult to give this book to a scientist, especially in Boston and Harvard and MIT. If you're sitting, it's not a kid's job. But the point is, we have not to just read this book, we have to digest it. Or probably just make a soup out of it and drink it. That's all you have to do. This book, we should know in and out. There are many people in Vrindavan, I have seen, they can chant all verses of Bhagavad Gita from 1st to 18th chapter, from 1st to 700 verse, and then they can go backwards from 700 to 1st verse. That's how they know this book. That's what I was telling, you can afford to forget your name, but not this book. Don't forget this book. This is the book we have, which is a basis of Bhagavatam, which is the basis of Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is a foundation, by the way. Many devotees or many spiritualists, they somehow rate Bhagavad Gita not as important or below Bhagavatam. Like Prabhupada says, Bhagavad Gita is undergraduation, Bhagavatam is post-graduation, Chaitanya Charitamrita is super specialization. But this doesn't mean Bhagavad Gita has less value, because without undergraduation you can never understand what's super specialization. Undergraduation is, by the way, foundation, isn't it? If you look from other perspective. So what's there in this book? Why many people are praising this book? For example, many politicians, and like Mahatma Gandhi, and these quotations we have behind Bhagavad Gita. And Mahatma Gandhi said, "When doubts haunt me, when disappointments stare in me in face, I see only one rain of horizon, I turn to Bhagavad Gita." Now, I'm quoting a politician here because because Mahatma Gandhi was a man of determination. He inspired, who was he? Who was in Africa, who was like he was inspired by Mahatma Gandhi and Nelson Mandela. He inspired many people around the world, and his inspiration was Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita can inspire politicians, by the way. That's the idea. It's not, you see, if you say Bhagavad Gita is just a religious book, what politician is doing with that? Mahatma Gandhi was a sort of religious and politician, but it inspired him. It inspired many writers. Aldous Huxley, if you know him. Bhagavad Gita is a more systematic statement of spiritual evolution. These are Westerners. These are not Indians. And they read Bhagavad Gita from a Western perspective, and they found it's a very systematic, you see the words used, it's a systematic statement of spiritual evolution. And doing value to mankind, it is one of the most clear and comprehensive summaries of perennial philosophy ever revealed. Hence the enduring value is subject not only to India but to all of humanity. This is Aldous Huxley. Aurobindo, do you know Aurobindo? He was a famous philosopher, even in West. A yogi. He said the Bhagavad Gita, a true scripture of human race, a living creation rather than a book, with a new message for every age and a new meaning for every civilization. Beautiful. Even yogis, not writers, politicians, but yogis are praising Bhagavad Gita. Shankaracharya, even Mayavadi praises Bhagavad Gita. He's an Advaitvadi, he's a head of that. He says, from a clear knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, the goals of human existence become fulfilled. Bhagavad Gita is a manifest quintessence of all the teachings of Vedic scriptures. Henry David Thoreau, this we have behind Bhagavad Gita. He was a philosopher, yeah. And this is, we have the quotation right behind Bhagavad Gita. This is William Van Humboldt, Prussian philosopher. He said, the most beautiful, perhaps the only true philosophical song existing in any known tongue, perhaps the deepest and loftiest thing the world has to show. Yeah, he's from Germany, by the way. Berlin, Prussian philosopher. And he said it's a philosophical song. Albert Schweitzer, he was a physician. Not just yogis, not just philosophers, not just politicians, but physicians. He came to India, he read Bhagavad Gita, and he said Bhagavad Gita has a profound influence of spirit of mankind, but its devotion to God, which is manifested by action. He could also understand Bhagavad Gita as a book of action, not just meditation and, you know, all these things. He could understand that. Okay, the idea is why these people are praising Bhagavad Gita a lot. And I'm going to discuss in details now, but in one line, Bhagavad Gita is a conclusion of all Vedic knowledge. If you read Vedas, it's impossible to do that. First, to read Vedas, of course you can download some translations from net, but that will make no sense to you, because all those people who have translated Vedas, their whole agenda was very different. Like Max Muller, isn't it? And who else was there? Max Muller and who was there with him? Weber. And then William Monier, that dictionary, Sanskrit dictionary. All these people, they were commissioned by British East India Company to actually misinterpret Vedic knowledge and to show that Vedic knowledge has no purpose except doing some yajnas. You do swaha and that's it, and chant some mantras and finish. And they did like that. So you can't understand Vedas just by downloading translations. You have to learn Sanskrit, and for learning Sanskrit you have to spend 12 years. What do you do with that? And even after 12 years you learn some basic Sanskrit. For learning Vedic Sanskrit, which is different from normal Sanskrit, you have to spend another 12 years. And then you start reading Vedas. And then Rig Veda has some 1 crore mantras. What's in English 1 crore equal to? 1 crore? 1 million? Okay, 1 million mantras it has, minimum. And then there's a third Veda, Samved, Yajurved. Then you go and read. And then also you will not be able to understand, because for understanding Vedas, you also need to learn 6 subjects more, not just Sanskrit. That is Chanda, Nirukta, Jyotish, Shiksha, Kalp and Vyakrana. So Vyakrana you have learned more, 5 more subjects. What do you do with that? Then you have to spend another 12 years. You cannot read Vedas. It's impossible. Even if you try to do that. So what do you do with that? So that's why Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. He knew that if we don't read Vedas, there is no... Veda means knowledge, we don't have knowledge. So he spoke Bhagavad Gita, he summarized all Vedic knowledge in just 700 verses and 18 chapters. And made it very easy. If you read Sanskrit of Gita, any child can also understand, isn't it? Even without understanding Sanskrit, if you start reading, you can just make out something. So Krishna spoke in a very simple language for people like us to make sense of Gita. That is why Gita is the essence of all Vedic scriptures. It is said, Saram Saram Udhayatam. It's the essence of Vedas. Like, you churn something and then you again churn something and take it out. So that's Bhagavad Gita. Not only philosophers, not only scientists, not only writers, politicians, even Vedas praise Bhagavad Gita. You can imagine. Vedas themselves, there is no Purana, there is no Veda which is not talking about Gita. So, like for example, Padma Puran, it has a full chapter dedicated to praise of Gita. Agni Puran, it praises Bhagavad Gita. Skanda Puran praises Bhagavad Gita. You take any Purana, it has to include praise of Bhagavad Gita. That's how important Bhagavad Gita is. Atharvaveda says, oh, this is a very beautiful verse, I purposefully put it, because yoga practices. Western word, yoga, yoga, yoga. Okay. So then you can go to them and tell them, those fools who want to attain liberation by constant yoga practice without hearing the wisdom of Gita is fit to be laughed at even by a child. It's like that. You know, well, okay, fine, you do yoga, but then you have to add Gita knowledge. Otherwise, you don't understand anything. And Vedas themselves say, this will fit to be laughed at even by a child. Okay. Varaha Puran, verse 8, it praises Gita. Krishna is saying in Varaha Puran, Gita is my supreme knowledge. It is indeed my form, without a doubt. Even a half word of this Gita is eternal and beyond any material description. Even a half word of Gita. It is said in scriptures, if you know even one chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you get liberated. If you know even one verse of Gita, you get liberated. Even if you know half verse of Gita, you get liberated. And even forget that. Even if you know half word of Bhagavad Gita, just a word, you get liberated. Even forget that. Even you know, if you know the full stuff of Bhagavad Gita, you get liberated. That's said in scriptures. It's so important. That's why it should be on your tips. Bhagavad Gita, it should be on your tips. If in sleep we wake you up, hey, 15 chapter, 14 verse, okay, I don't know, you can say something, you know. Something, it should be like that. This is in one of Skanda Puran says, Gita is the essence of all scriptures and thus special in itself. The idea is, I'm showing you intellectuals from the West, intellectuals from the East, all Vedas, Puranas, everybody praises Bhagavad Gita. Question is why? If it is just a religious book, why will so many people praise Bhagavad Gita? Why is that? What's the problem there? That we have to figure out. And that's what I'm going to show you. Why these people and Vedas are praising Bhagavad Gita again and again? What's so special in this book? We think it's a book of maybe Krishna consciousness just. No, that's not the point. It's not just limited to Krishna consciousness. It's a book for humanity. That's why these people are praising, isn't it? They don't really only find devotion there. They found many other things. That's what I'm going to show you today. Okay, Padma Puran, 17 chapter, 18 chapter, Agni Puran, chapter 381, Harivamsh Puran, and the list can go and go. Brahman Puran, Brahmavart Puran, Gargar Samhita, all Puranas, they have praise of Bhagavad Gita. I have read all of them, and I exactly know, you know, what, how these books are actually giving Bhagavad Gita a lot of importance. Without praising Bhagavad Gita, no Purana is complete. Okay, in spite of so much praise, still people think Gita is a mythological book and it's a religious book. It's a common understanding. So before showing you why Gita is so important and so much praised and laudable, just briefly I want to tell that these people what think Gita is a mythological book, religious book, these both points are wrong. It's a bogus propaganda, or it's a bogus misnomer. It's a common misnomer. Gita is not a mythological book. And we know this. You know this Kurukshetra? This is Kurukshetra. This is an immortal banyan tree. It's written there. Anybody gone to Kurukshetra here? Visited? You saw that? The tree. It's immortal. Germans came there and they tried to analyze it. But they couldn't analyze the age. Age, maybe 5,000 something years, but they couldn't do anything. And it's immortal, it's considered. Because Krishna spoke Gita beneath this tree, it is said. He was standing beneath this tree with Arjuna on chariot. He spoke, this tree heard the Gita and it became immortal. That's the idea. Well, we are not becoming immortal. We heard Bhagavad Gita. What's happening? There's a problem with us. Okay, so this Mr. T.K.B. Rajan from Chennai, he's an archaeologist there in Kurukshetra. I met him and he found various artifacts in Kurukshetra there. They are the artifacts, arrows and spears, and they aged it and it came out 5,000 years ago. So we know that there was a battle 5,000 years ago in that place. It's confirmed archaeologically and that's mentioned in scriptures. And scripture says, in the battlefield, Gita was spoken. So Gita is not a mythological book, it's a historical book, at least, if you want to take it like that. It was spoken. Now, it is not just a figment of imagination. And then you have Dwarka city. Krishna was there, we understand. Dr. S.R. Rao, he just passed away 2 years back, 3 years back. He was doing research in Dwarka. He found Dwarka beneath the sea. You see, there are walls of Dwarka there. He found walls of Dwarka. He found seals which were used by Krishna and Balram in his kingdom, and those were marked by Krishna Balram photo and a bull, and it's there, and you know, he found that, and it's Dwarka was there, so Krishna was there and Mahabharata was there, and he spoke. This is so they found some stones which were used for ship, anchoring the ship. So we could understand in Dwarka they were doing export and import. When Krishna was there, he was doing this, and we know this by Mahabharata. There were a lot of export import with Greeks, and we understand by Mahabharata this was happening, and Krishna was doing that. Krishna and Balram, he was overseeing all those things. So the idea is, Gita is a historical book, and it was there, it was spoken. Is Gita a religious book? Well, Hermann Hesse, he's a Swiss poet, he said, this is a beautiful quotation. Marvel of Bhagavad Gita is its truly revelation of life's wisdom, which enables philosophy to blossom into religion. This guy, he could understand Bhagavad Gita as it is, which even we can't get a hold of as a devotee. He could really understand what's happening in Gita. The words he used, it's a life's wisdom, which enables philosophy to blossom into religion. And that's what it's all about. Bhagavad Gita is a book which marriages philosophy with religion, which is, in modern word, philosophy is different, religion is different, isn't it? That's what happened 100-200 years back. All this, it happened in Germany and France. It's right next, you know, Nietzsche and all those people, Marx. They say, well, religion is different, philosophy is different. Forget it. First they separated philosophy from science, then they separated religion from philosophy, and was just separate. But he could understand philosophy and religion is intertwined. This I have told you, Philam Bumbold. It's a philosophical song, he said. And Gita itself defines religion. It's a beautiful definition of religion. You ask, what is religion? People think religion is faith, a blind faith. No, Gita says no. This is 8th chapter, 3rd verse. Svabhav Adhyatma Uchyate. Gita says, wherever, any religion which changes your nature, which helps you to change your nature from evil to good, which helps you to bring good qualities, that is true religion. Otherwise, it's bogus. Now, that's a very good definition. It's a very universal definition. Gita gives universal definitions, not just designations. Christianity, Hinduism, Islam, this, no, forget it. If it is true, your nature and habits should change. If it's not changing in spite of following any religion, then either that religion is not right or you're not following properly. That's all. Simple. Svabhav means nature, adhyatma means religion or spirituality. changing one's nature is spirituality or religion. Okay, so having said that, why so many people now praise Bhagavad Gita? Now we have understood it's not religion, it's not mythology, it's a reality. So I'll give you four reasons why so many people are praising Bhagavad Gita and so many lots in laudable things in Vedas. The first reason is Bhagavad Gita is a law book. Now this term is important. You might have heard it, but it's important. Because there are two types of scriptures. One is decisive and one is informative. We can categorize scriptures into two. Some scriptures, they give us information. So if you read Puranas and this, they'll give you Mahabharata, Ramayana, it's all information. But Gita gives you decision. Now that's very important. Dharma Shastras will give you information. You have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this. But exactly, there's so many instructions what to do. There's so many philosophies, which philosophy should be followed. Gita is a decisive scripture. In the Sanskrit word is Nirnay Shastra. There's something called as Nirnay Shastra, Upadesh Shastra. So you have so many Upadesh Shastra, but Gita will tell you which one to follow, which one not to follow. You see, which one is right for this age, which one is right for previous ages. You have to have decisions. So if scriptures, you will also find contradictory proposals. Now which to follow? What to do? Scriptures praise Brahmachari Ashram a lot. Sannyasis. They say scriptures. And on the other hand, scriptures also praise Grahastha Ashram, householder. Both. So what to do? Should we become Grahastha or should we become Brahmachari? Both are praised. What to do? There's so many injunctions like that. So always remember, Gita is giving you decisions. And that is why it's a very important book. Because without decisions, there is no point of information, isn't it? You have so much information, but you don't have a decision power. What to do with that? You have so much data, but what to do with that? If you don't know, it's waste. It's useless. And that's why, you know, so nowadays, a new science is emerging in this internet age. And that's called as data analysis. You know that? Data analysts. Now, by internet age and Google, and they have collected so much data. But now they have to analyze what to do with that. There's a new branch of engineering, data analysis. That's what Gita is doing. It's doing data analysis. If you want to understand any Vedas, any scriptures, first you have to read Gita. If you go to any traditional Gurukul, they will first teach you Gita. Without Gita, Gita is like eyes by which you can scan all scriptures. Otherwise you'll become confused. 100%. So it's a Nirnaya Shastra. Gita gives you decision. For example, Gita gives you a decision, who is God? Now, it might seem simple to you, but if you read Vedas, Vedas praise many deities as God. Vedas start with praise of Indra, and then Vayu, and then Agni, and they call them as God. And even Vishnu. So what to do? Who is God then? So people who read Vedas, then they think Hinduism is polytheism or even worse than that, anthropomorphism. There are so many words there. Henotheism, there are so many words there. There are so many gods. But no. Now Gita gives a decision. There is just one God. By all Vedas I am to be known. Sarvasya chaam hriti sannivishto. Vedaisya sarve rahma vedyo. And you know how Gita gives his decision? Krishna explains in Gita that yes, all Vedas praise other demigods as gods. Yes, okay, fine. We understand that. But then Vedas say that actually they are not praising demigods, they are praising Krishna by the names of demigods. You see, that's the solution there. Sarva namadha eva. That's the verse used in Rig Veda. You see, in Vedas, there is a praise of Shiva. Now you might think when you read, okay, oh, this is Shiva, see. And they're calling Shiva as God. Okay, Shiva is God. As if they're praising Indra. Okay, yeah, Indra is God. It's there. Indra Sukta. But then Veda says, no. They're using the name Indra to praise Krishna. You got my point? Indra means king. So they're calling Krishna king. Shiva means all auspicious. They are using the name of Shiva to praise Krishna, and Krishna likes this. Krishna likes this indirect glorification. That's very nice. And that's very common. Like, suppose if you go to India, parents will name their children as what? Sometimes they name their children Ram. You know this in India? Or maybe sometimes Krishna. So similarly, when Krishna made this creation, there were many demigods. And they asked, what's my name? So Krishna says, well, I have many names. I'll give you my names to you. You see the point? And to Shiva he said, okay, one of my name is Shiva, I'll give you this name Shiva. One of the my name is Ganesh. Ganesh means who's a lord of all people. I'll give you this name Ganesh. One of my name is Indra, and I give this name to you. So actually Vedas are not praising any demigod. They are praising God with his original names. But then we get confused and we think they are praising demigods. You see the point how Gita is explaining? Gita is a decisive scripture. It's giving decision. And this is a beautiful verse here. It also decision, it's giving decision what is the best yoga. There are so many yogas, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, so many yogas. But then Krishna says in 6th chapter last verse, Bhakti Yoga is a supreme form of yoga. By reading Vedas, you will not be able to understand. The initial part of Veda is talking about Karma Yoga, the middle part is talking about Jnana Yoga, the last part is talking about Bhakti Yoga, if you read Vedas like that. Samhitas are talking about Karma Yoga, Upanishads about Jnana Yoga, then Puranas are talking about Bhakti Yoga. So which yoga to follow? Krishna says, okay, this is the best yoga, Bhakti Yoga. The second reason, not only Gita's law book, but Gita is a book with less letters and more meaning. That is the beauty of Gita. Concise and precise. Every verse of Gita can have 1,000 meanings. You know this? Minimum. Every verse. Of course, Prabhupada has given one meaning, which is a devotional perspective. But every verse of Gita can have 1,000 meanings. This is said by Madhvacharya. But all of thousands we can't access. It's not open to humanity. But at least 8 meanings we can access. But out of that, I'm just telling you 3 meanings. There is something called adibhautik meaning, godly meaning, spiritual meaning and scientific meaning. Every verse. Every verse can be translated from a devotional perspective of God, from a spiritual perspective of soul, and from a scientific perspective of matter. God, soul and matter. Same verse can have 3 meanings. Minimum. 8 meanings we know. Rest 1,000 meanings we don't know. How to get out of it. Now Madhva knows. We don't know. But that's the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is a compressed knowledge. Or you can say, you know, in computer language, zip folder? It's like zipped, you know. You should have a program to unzip it. That's one thing. And that is should be here. Okay, so I'll give you an example for that. So everybody knows this verse? Na sato vidyate bhavo, na vidyate sato bhava. Oh sorry, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sato. This Bhagavad Gita, 2nd chapter, 16th verse. The spiritual meaning Prabhupada gives. This is from Prabhupada, spiritual meaning. For the non-existent, the material body, there is no permanence. And for the eternal, the soul, there is no change. That's clear? It's clear to all of you, isn't it? Yes or no? Yes. Come on. I have to know whether you're understanding or not. The spiritual meaning, okay. This verse is talking about soul and body. Body is temporary. It doesn't exist forever. Soul is permanent. It's always exist. This is a scientific meaning. And I'll ask you something. Now you hear properly. Now, what exists will always be there, what does not exist will never be there. This is a scientific meaning which comes from Sanskrit. If you know Sanskrit, you can derive. So, na asato. Asato means temporary. Bhavo means existence. Asato means what doesn't exist. What doesn't exist cannot exist. And sato means exist. What exists can never not exist. You understand? No. In simple words, if you really understand Sanskrit, this means what exists, it exists. What doesn't exist, it doesn't exist. So what's this? Which is this law of science? You know this? This is a law. Yeah, what's that? Which one is that? Conservation of energy. Energy can neither be created, neither be destroyed. It's there. What exists, it always exists. It's neither created, neither destroyed. What doesn't exist, it cannot exist. Simple. It's a law of conservation of energy. This was pointed by Madhvacharya in his books 800 years back. Newton said 300 years back. Law of conservation of energy. This is said by Madhvacharya 800 years back from Bhagavad Gita. We knew that. Law of conservation of energy. And so there is a scientific meaning and spiritual meaning, and then there is a devotional meaning to this. And that is very important. Every verse of Bhagavad Gita is talking about Krishna and Radha. Every verse. Every verse of Bhagavad Gita is talking about Rasila of Krishna. Every verse. But if you know how to decode it. Now I'll show you how it's happening in this verse. A little Sanskrit knowledge you should need. But anyway. Na sato vidyate bhavo. Asat. Sat means permanent. Asat means temporary. Asat also means if you cannot achieve a goal, you're called asat. Isn't it? If you cannot achieve goal, you are called asat. If you can achieve goal, you are called sat. So this verse. So asat are those gopis which could not go to Rasleela of Krishna when Krishna called them. When Krishna played the flute, so many gopis went in the night. Some gopis couldn't make it. So those gopis are called by asat here. Nasato vidyate bhavo. It is said those gopis who could not go to Krishna, they didn't exist. That means they died. And they left their body, and in such spiritual body they joined the Rasleela. They left their body. Na bhava sate sata vidyate. Sata means who could go to Krishna. All these Radha and all these eternal gopis, they went to Krishna. Who went to Krishna, na abhavo. They did not stay in the house. They cut all material relationships and they could make it to Krishna. So this verse is talking about liberated gopis and gopis which just joined Krishna's pastime, sadhana siddh gopis. That's all. It is explanation by Vallabhacharya, by the way. It's not my speculation. I am speculating. I can't do that. Vallabhacharya explains that. So you see, every verse, 7 chapter, first verse, Maya Sakta Mana Partha, Yogam Yunjan Madashraya, Asamshayam Samagra Mam Yatha Vyasa Sita Shinu. That's the 7 chapter, first verse. That verse is talking about flute of Krishna. Now you can't see it because it's not there. So that's the idea there. Bhagavad-gita is, that's why people praise Bhagavad-gita. Even Sanskrit scholars praise. Even though it's Sanskrit is so simple, if you go to any Sanskrit scholar, he will say, yeah, this is a book you have to understand. If you want to learn Sanskrit, Gita and Bhagavatam. They are very tough. Because it has multi-layered interpretations. Multi-layered interpretations. And that's what we have to read Gita from that perspective. That's why these people knew who praised Bhagavad Gita. They knew what's happening there in this book. Okay, this is one example how it has at least minimum 3 meanings. There are 8 meanings. So there is something called yagyik meaning also. Meaning from the perspective of sacrifice. And then there is meaning from the perspective of history. Puranic meaning. So there are minimum 8 meanings which Vedas mentioned to every verse of Bhagavad Gita. And every word of Bhagavad Gita is a name of Krishna. That's also like that. Even that word na, you know na? Na. So what that means? Not. Simply not. But that's the name of Krishna. So every word in Gita is name of, Vidyate is name of Krishna, Asat is name of Krishna. Bhava is definitely a name of Krishna. Bhava word comes in Vishnu Sahasrana, we know that. Sata is a name of Krishna, even Na is a name of Krishna. Every word of Gita is name of Krishna. That's why when you chant Gita, every verse, even if you don't understand, you're actually glorifying God. By His names. There's so many names, Mahaprabhu says. Nam, Namakari, Bahudha, have millions of names. But, of course, you don't understand how that is. But if you study systematically Bhagavad Gita, you can understand every word is a name. In fact, every gap, there's a gap between na and asat. You see that? There's a gap. There is also knowledge there. Yeah, if you know how to take it out. That is our scriptures. That is our scriptures. There's a knowledge which you can't see when you can take it out. By the system of Vedic knowledge, by the system of Nyaya and Shiksha. If you know that system, you can take that out from there. Okay. The third reason why Bhagavad Gita is so special is because it has it's not only a law book, it's not only concise and precise, it gives us complete knowledge. Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita 7.2, I shall now declare you in full this knowledge, both material and spiritual. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Jnanam aham sabhi jnanam. Material and spiritual. Krishna says, I am also giving you material knowledge. So where is that? Where is chemistry? Where is physics? Where is maths? Where is psychology? Where is biology in Bhagavad Gita? What's happening? Is Krishna speaking a lie? No. Of course, he can't speak a lie. So it is there. I'm going to show you how it is there. I'm giving you some examples now. And this is what I talk to scientists when I go. If at all I have to talk about Bhagavad Gita, if you are talking about consciousness, something else, you are talking something else. And if you are talking about quantum and chaos and emergence theory, functionalism, you are talking something. But if you are talking about Gita, you talk like this. So, how it has complete knowledge? Bhagavad Gita has philosophy. You see, by the way, before this, knowledge in this world is divided into three sections, three broad sections. One is formal sciences. Formal science is a hardcore science. That is physics, chemistry, maths, and also biology. Isn't it? These four subjects. They are hardcore sciences, formal sciences. Then you have something called as, this is at one end. Other end is philosophy, which separated from science. Philosophy deals not with hardcore sciences. Hardcore sciences deals with observation, hypothesis, experimentation, and theory. And the language of hardcore science is mathematics. You have to prove everything mathematically. Now, at the other end is philosophy. That's also knowledge. But philosophy helps to analyze. Philosophy is a knowledge which helps you analyze knowledge. You see? So that's called epistemology and ontology, morphology. Philosophy is different. It's dealing with more with those subjects which science cannot deal, which are not quantitative subjects, like aesthetics, beauty, ethics, morals, which science cannot handle. Science doesn't have tools to handle those subjects. Beauty, love, what to do with them? That's with philosophy. Or metaphysics, like soul and God, it's all for philosophy. There are two ends. In between, there is another branch of knowledge which is called as normative sciences. That means psychology, social sciences, isn't it? These are not exactly hardcore sciences because psychology is dealing with emotions and feelings. You can analyze, but at the same time, you can't give a clear-cut quantitative picture. So you're all understanding? You're on the same page? You're getting this point? So there are broadly three subjects, like hardcore science, psychology, and philosophy. Gita touches on all of these three dimensions of knowledge. So Gita is touching on philosophy, you see. I'll show you the example. Philosophy. This is philosophy in one line. 6th chapter, 21st verse. Yam labdva na cha param labham manyate na adhikam tata. This is the goal of all philosophy. Krishna says, upon gaining which there is no greater gain. This is what is philosophy for. We are trying to find something. Upon attaining that, you don't want to attain anything else. You are completely satisfied, isn't it? If philosophy doesn't give you satisfaction, it's useless, it's nonsense. It's not philosophy. That should be the purpose of real philosophy, isn't it? Satisfaction. Krishna puts it in a very beautiful words, upon gaining which there's nothing greater to be achieved, greater gain to be achieved. So, Bhagavad Gita defines the goal of philosophy. Bhagavad Gita also defines philosophy as such. There were three revolutions in philosophy, if you know that. The first revolution was brought by René Descartes. You know this person, Descartes, yeah? Yeah, Descartes, Descartes. So he brought a revolution. The next revolution was by Ludwig Wittgenstein, and the third revolution was Thomas Kuhn. So what they said is, and all these revolutions are mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is all about decision, I told you. Bhavaita has these three uniqueness: decision, definition and distinction. No other scripture will give you these three topics. Bhavaita gives you decision, it gives you definitions of every word. It is defining what is God. It is defining what is love. It is defining what is liberation. Vedas don't do that. Vedas uses the word, but don't define. And Bhavaita gives distinction. It gives a proper perception to perceive the Vedic scriptures. Otherwise, you can't understand them. With what consciousness we have to approach Vedic scriptures? Now, René Descartes, basically, this modern philosophy, he was talking about decision, that's all. René Descartes said, okay, there is matter and there is, so dualist theory, you know this, no? Dualism. There is matter and mind. Let's separate them. Now he said, okay, as scientists we are concerned with matter. Mind, give it to church. That's all. Hey, it is there, well let them handle. So he divided. He gave a decision. René Descartes brought a revolution of decision, a decisive point in science, which separated science and religion and philosophy forever. And Gita is all about that. Ludwig Wittgenstein was a linguist. He brought a revolution in philosophy by saying that language is all that matters. Language. If you change the language, philosophy changes. And that's what is all Gita. Gita is talking also about language. What I'm trying to impress you is, these concepts of revolution, they are coming from Bhagavad Gita, you see? The concept of language, which can define philosophy, that's here in Bhagavad Gita. The concept of dividing matter and mind, that concept is coming from Bhagavad Gita. Thomas Kuhn talked about change in paradigm shift. So he says science goes in paradigm shifts. First there was Newton, he talked about classical mechanics. Then there came Einstein, he talked about relativity, which was just contradicting classical mechanics. Then came quantum physics, which is contradicting relativity. You know, nobody knows how to relate all the three. Nobody understands now. This concept of multi-level layers of reality. Everything is real. Classical mechanics works. Relativity works. Classical mechanics works in this world. Relativity works in sky, macrocosm, universe. Quantum mechanics works in microcosm, in atoms. At least that's what we understand. But how to relate them? How do you understand that? So, that means there is multi-level layers of reality, not just ideas. Reality is also existing multi-level layers. That concept is coming from Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita talks about multi-level layered reality. It talks about that. And that's, so the point is, all concepts in philosophy and science, all paradigm shift, these concepts are there in Bhagavad Gita already. That's why Krishna says, I have given you complete knowledge. Complete knowledge. And we know in history, many scientists, they were aware of Upanishads, they were aware of Gita. Isn't it? Einstein had a big library. And even Newton, he had access to Eastern knowledge. We know that, and they were reading. Even today, so I visited MIT, I asked a physicist there, and he said, even as physicists, we still read Upanishads because we know there is knowledge of reality, not God. They're not interested in God. They understand that. And that is Bhagavata all about. That's what I was impressing you all about. Bhagavata also talks about wrong philosophies. Philosophy is all about what is right, what is wrong, isn't it? If you want to be a philosopher, you have to prove all other philosophies wrong. Isn't it? Otherwise you're not a philosopher, you're not called as a famous philosopher. So Bhagavata talks about right philosophy, and this is all wrong philosophies in one verse. Gita is so nice. Krishna summarizes the 16th chapter, 8th verse, all wrong philosophies of this word in just one verse. Just one verse. You don't need to read so many books to understand. Krishna gives a decision. This is wrong. These philosophies are wrong. Asatyam apratishtham te. The first philosophy, asatyam. This is the philosophy of Buddhism, by the way. Buddhism says everything is illusion, isn't it? Buddhism says everything is ephemeral. Even you are illusion, basically. Only thoughts are real, isn't it? So they have a hard time to explain reincarnation. Buddhism, everything is zero. Nothing exists. What is reality? Nothing. And that's the idea. So Krishna says, no, that's wrong, according to Vedic opinion. Okay, apratishtante, jagad aur anishwaram. The philosophy which says anishwaram, anishwaram means there is no God. The philosophy which says no God, that's wrong. Forget it. So modern Western atheistic theories which say no God is wrong. Aparaspara sambhutam, philosophy which says that the realm of spiritual and the realm of material, they are two separate realms. They are not linked. That metaphysics, this is physics, there is no link, that's wrong. Krishna, by the way, probably believed in, Plato probably believed in Gita philosophy. Plato said, you know, that there is a Platonic word which has an influence on this reality, isn't it? They were all into this. There's a link between higher realm and lower realm. But all these philosophy, including science, they separated it. That's different, this is different. Krishna says, that's wrong. And kim anyat kama haitukam, kam haitukam, philosophy which says, there is no cause in life other than lust. Simply enjoy. That philosophy is wrong. That's materialism, isn't it? There's no other purpose to life, simply enjoy. You don't have to worry about anything. Just do it. Whatever you want, just do it. Krishna says that philosophy is wrong. So he encapsulates all philosophies and gives his decision. You see, it's a very beautiful verse. And then there are more philosophies talking about. I'm not going to Sanskrit, but Nyaya, Visheshika, Sankhya is talking about all those things. Krishna, Gita is talking about psychology. Now I told about philosophy, psychology and hardcore sciences. Gita is also talking about psychology. Now this is a very, you see this verse? This is a famous verse. 18th chapter, 35th verse. This is talking about tamogun. Tamogun, mode of ignorance. Krishna says, and that determination which cannot go beyond dreaming, fearfulness, lamentation, moroseness and illusion, such unintelligent determination, O son of Partha, is in mode of darkness. Krishna in this verse is talking about determination or intelligence. Intelligence, function of intelligence is determination. Krishna is saying that intelligence which is full of dreaming, fear, lamentation, illusion, that intelligence I consider in mode of darkness. Simple. But actually this verse, if you decode it, there is full psychology in this verse. Any concept in psychology is coming from this verse. Now I'll show you how. This is Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is using these words. That is modern psychology. Dreaming. What Krishna called as dreaming, modern psychologists call as delusion, hallucination, schizophrenia and psychosis. Isn't it? That's a dreaming state. What Krishna called as fearfulness, that modern psychologists called as paranoia. Paranoia is a condition where patients fear. What Krishna calls as lamentation, that Krishna, modern psychologists call as depression. What Krishna calls as moroseness, that is modern psychologists called as bipolar disorder. What Krishna calls as illusion, that modern psychologists called as mania and insanity. So all diseases of psychology, they are in one verse of Bhagavad Gita. And all diseases arise from mode of ignorance. You see, that they don't know. That they don't understand. Krishna gives more depth. Krishna says any mental problem, any psychological problem, these are the most common psychological problems. They are arising from mode of ignorance. That's all. If you can just change the lifestyle of the person from mode of ignorance to mode of goodness, which 18th chapter talks about, you can treat any psychological problem. Modern day psychology is all about medicines, isn't it? Psychology has reduced to psychiatry. Medicines. They don't understand. They have no concept of mode of ignorance. And Gita gives the insight into psychology. Gita also gives insight into biology. Now this is hardcore science, formal science, which I was talking about. Gita doesn't support artificial life, which scientists are trying in laboratory. Let's create life. Krishna says, Aham Bija Pratapita. Krishna says, I am the life-giving source. You cannot make life in laboratory as scientists are trying hard, you know, artificial life and then silicon-based life, something, you know, all these things. You can't do that. It's just a waste of time. Many scientists says it's a waste of money and time. You can't do that. It's impossible. You can't create life in lab. Bhagavad Gita says that. Bhagavad Gita says evolution is wrong. frankly in this verse. This is 13.5. Brahma Sutra Padaishava Hetu Madhvir Vinishita. Krishna says, everything in this world has cause and effect. Everything. Evolution believes there is no cause. Isn't it? And there is no effect. That's basically evolution theory. Do you understand? That's evolution, no? Everything is by chance. There is no cause by which these things are happening. It is by chance. That's all. And what's the purpose? No purpose. Krishna directly contradicts. Krishna says, no, these theories are wrong. Everything has a cause and an effect and a purpose. And that's Gita talking about biology. No evolution. Evolution theory doesn't accept. This is about psychology, philosophy and biology. You see how Gita is talking about complete knowledge. Gita is fourth reason why Gita is so praised. Not only it's a law book, not only it's precise, not only it's...